The Best Podcast in Baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
They are going to be a tougher team than they were last year. We'll see if that's a better team. But usually tougher teams are better teams. But you got to be talented too. Because if not, you'd get a bunch of high school heroes out there. And it's not of the movies. This team will be tougher. The Cardinals are in a tough spot because they don't want to just come out and say they're going to get drilled in April. I think what they're really thinking though is it's going to be a tough month. But we have a tougher team.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week because you demanded it, and it's overdue. He's been here in Jupiter for several weeks, and we haven't once stuck a recorder in front of his face to get his thoughts, which is probably good because there's just been this backlog of topics to talk about. It is, of course, St. Louis Post-Dispatch sports columnist Ben Fredrickson. Where do we even begin? Where do you want to begin?
Well, it's a good thing you didn't stick a recorder in my face when I first got down here because I had food poisoning. And
oh, right.
You would have had to get a new recorder. But feeling much better now. And all of a sudden, camp.
Hydrated.
Yeah, very hydrated. I I won't get into that. I feel good. Camp is almost done. I think I was down here.
Would you say you're in the best shape of your life?
Well, I feel like I went through one of those cleanses, but I won't get into the details. Camp has been, my trip down here, other than the food poisoning, has been good. I was only down here for 2 weeks compared to three, so it's felt a little different. And it's, I think everybody's to the point now where they're ready to get the heck out of here and go play games that count. You got to make a little detour in Arizona, but those are going to feel more like probably real games because they're coming en route to the real games. So, I don't know that the Cardinals have a bunch of boxes to check. I feel like we're not going to see the real Cardinals for a while because of the injuries, and they're disappointed by that. But also, I think trying to draw a line between not being able to control what they won't have, but also playing the way they want to play with what they do have. And they've got to get that right out of the gate because the teams they're playing are pretty fierce to start the season. So there's an acknowledgement of that, but also I think an eagerness for it. I think these guys are pretty motivated by a lot of the vibes around the team. There's more internal confidence than there is external confidence, clearly. And that goes to everything from the old pitchers in the starting rotation to the manager who got a really well-received contract extension back home. Ollie knows everybody's just standing and applauding his contract extension, being sarcastic there. But everything is kind of, I think they're ready to kind of go into prove-it mode, and we'll know soon enough if they can.
Do you want to start there with the contract extension before we spill into all the other stuff? You happened pretty much soon after you arrived, and you wrote about it. What did you make of the timing of that decision and that choice? It happened fast. It was not something that was on the table. In fact, vehemently was like, this is not something we're going to do unless we see it becoming a problem, unless we see it becoming a topic of conversation. Newsflash, it did. So what did you make about the timing of it?
Well, we should have known it was coming when we found out Shohei Ohtani's trainer was betting on Ollie getting the extension. You know, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I was kind of making a hip, nuanced, new age joke. I'm going to be showing paying attention to the news.
I got it. Yeah.
Okay, extension. I believe Ollie when he said he was planning on going into this, going through this season with that on his plate, like with knowing that every win or loss was going to be turned into a conversation about should he be the Cardinals manager. I think he had kind of braced for that, and I think that he was preparing for that. I think what happened was John Mozeliak, Bill DeWitt Jr. looked at the way that the injuries were piling up and looked at the way this season was going to start. Believe it or not, they actually do look past the first series and past the first game into deeper parts of the season, and they saw 13 of 16 postseason teams. You had the numbers of how many, beyond that, how many winning teams they're playing from last season.
It's like all but one.
22 of 25.
I mean, it's going to be a pony through April. And I think that a couple things happened. I think they, in their heart of hearts, don't want to fire Ollie Marmol. And I also think they saw a team that could be perhaps negatively affected by that conversation being at an 11 on the volume if they go out and lose to the Dodgers and the Padres and don't start the season well, because in part because they're not at full health. So I think they were kind of trying to get out in front of maybe taking it in the teeth a little bit to start the season. I also think that, you know, we've talked a lot about it just in covering it and, you know, at the condo and stuff. I think in some ways it kind of was an acknowledgement, and Bill DeWitt Jr. pretty much said as much, is that they view this was as much on ownership and front office as it was on on the manager.
He was very clear. He said, we had a bad year. I had a bad year. Mo had a bad year. Ollie had a bad year, and the players had a bad year. He said those four things. He said we all had a bad year, and he didn't go, well, we as an organization. No, he like named names.
And Ollie will say he had a bad year, and I think a lot of people would agree he should have done a lot of things better. I don't think that he was going to win a bunch of games with that pitching staff, whether he and Tyler O'Neill got along or not. But the Contreras thing was totally – that was out of panic. I think some of the Jordan Walker stuff, like over-fretting about – some of his stuff with the, at the plate was probably in some ways out of panic. The Cardinals didn't know how to lose, and therefore they were finding ways to make losing worse. And that ultimately, a lot of that falls on the manager. You either bring down the temperature in the room, or you bring it up in good ways or bad, and that's really a big part of the job. So he has to learn from that, and I think he has. I think Ollie has tasted the highs of being the guy who won 90 games in his first season, 90 plus games, and he's tasted the lows of losing 90 plus games, and I think he's a little more in the middle, and I think he has a little more kind of nuance to how he's going to try to handle some things. And I think he's been humbled some. Who wouldn't be? So I didn't have a problem with the extension, because I didn't think he was the big problem last year, and I'm also the first to say that this doesn't guarantee anything.
Right.
We've seen, I mean, ask Mike Schilt how quickly things can turn. He was one day away from getting an extension, and then he got fired.
Or Mike Matheny got the extension, just similar to this, same thing. Got the extension, trying to take the heat off, and he didn't last the rest of the season.
Didn't finish the season, right. and because of the losing. And that was a manager who was at risk of going under 500 for this season. But not on his career, and Ollie is at risk of going under 500 for his career, potentially against Mike Schilt in San Diego, because he's four games up. He's four games above 500, and that would be the kind of conversation that, if he were on an expiring deal, would get pretty loud. It could still get loud this season, and he knows that too.
There's a difference between salary and security. Like that's what you're getting at.
The Cardinals, basically what the Cardinals did was guarantee that he'll get paid more if he does get fired. And that's all that this was. And in some ways he deserves some back pay for having to deal with some of those jokers he had pitching for him last year, in my opinion. And Ollie knows what it's at. And I do respect this about him. He gets it. And he knows the one thing that will get everybody behind him is winning. And not just winning in the regular season, but winning in the postseason. I mean, you and I were there. I talked to Ollie about this spring and saw him and Tony La Russa hold court for hours after the baseball writers' dinner. And they were talking about everything, about managing, but also about perception and how people perceive you. I mean, Tony, we forget that Tony wasn't beloved, you know, the way he is now, and just about how to handle it, what you can control, what you can't control. And I think he knows ultimately it's about what you do on the field, and the status of your contract is something that's on a paper that guarantees how much money you make or don't make if they let you go early. And we all know that if this season derails like last season's did, then it's not going to be good for anybody, and it could not be good for people above Ollie too.
You had a chance to talk with Ollie, and I believe you asked him about what did he learn from last year. He and I had a conversation for the special section that is in the Post-Dispatch Sunday. We're recording this on Friday just to give people the perspective. So March 24th's edition of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. A lot of the stories are already online. They'll be kind of recollected and put there as well. But if you want the handheld special section, we'll talk more about it throughout this podcast. But in our conversation, he said one area where he felt he could improve following last year was empathy, understanding what the failure is like, and not pushing harder, taking a moment to go, what does this person need to help to get out of the failure? That harmonized a bit with what John Mozeliak told me in his office. And he's said this a few times. His line has been that, you know, losing has a humbling effect. Well, he elaborated on that when we were talking, and he, because I was like, well, what does that mean? Like, that's just, that's a phrase that you can begin a press conference with. But what does that mean? And he said, for so long, the things we were doing would work out. Then all of a sudden, you had a season where none of it worked out. And everything that we knew to do in the past to stop it was not working. He likened it to a Rubik's Cube that couldn't be put back together. And every time you got one facet in place, all the rest of them were a mess. So those two things, I think, kind of harmonize a little bit. This, the empathy with failure and how an individual responds to struggles. And then the other one was an organization that finally had to learn that it doesn't always have the get out of jail free card. It does have, you know, these other teams aren't waiting for the Cardinals to catch up and do the right move. You know, they're going to pull away.
Yeah, the National League Central might, but the baseball.
Right.
I mean, I'm serious.
Great point.
There's a part of that where it's like if the division falls apart and the Cardinals are conditioned to thinking they can really just kind of, as long as you somewhat stay alive, you can win the division. But then, like, again, you get out of it and reality checks in. Mm-hmm. And that's been the case for seasons now. And last year, the division didn't even wait. The division left them.
Yeah.
In the dust, and it wasn't a good division, and it's not going to be that good of a division this year. But you run the risk of it, when teams see you finish last, the aura fades a little bit. And why can't they go beat the Cardinals? Who says the Cardinals always have to be in it? They weren't last year. I mean, that's a changing thing. So Ali mentioned empathy when I talked to him. I think sometimes you got to know as a manager and a coach or a leader of anybody in any business who needs the arm around the shoulder and who needs the poke in the chest. And sometimes it might be the same guy who needs both on a different day.
Yeah.
Sometimes they might need both in the same day. And I think that he's listening to him talk. He's learned to try to understand it's how you talk to someone, how you manage someone isn't always how you would want to be managed. It might be how they need to be managed in that moment. Yeah. And it doesn't mean you're not true to yourself if you're trying to deliver the message in the best way for them. I also think, too, one of the themes is down here is that there just has to be some things that the players are just better at doing themselves. Mm-hmm. I think he was put in a spot last year a lot of times, and it's the job. You got to do what the job asks. It's not making an excuse where he found himself handling things he wouldn't have normally handled.
Right.
Because Yadier Molina would have handled it, or Albert Pujols when he was back.
Or Skip Schumacher as the bench coach.
Absolutely. And all of a sudden, the manager's handling it in a way that it maybe people didn't like it, but maybe it should have never gotten there. So I think that's one thing you hear. And I wrote the column about this for the special sections like this. I'm tired of hearing about the Cardinals talk about all this leadership. It's like pitching. It's like, okay, go do it. I mean, go lead on the field, go lead in the clubhouse. Stop telling us about how this leadership that you've added is going to be so great. Go put it into motion. And that can be throughout the organization. It can be the front office and ownership making an in-season improvement to a team that they haven't done in a long time. Getting out in front of a problem instead of waiting and, you know, exciting your depth and being proactive, more proactive than usual. Mm-hmm. It can be a player holding another player accountable, lifting a guy up it has to be, this goes with the theme. There wasn't a fall guy this time around because they're all owning it, trying to own it together. And that means they all have to do it. They all have to get better together. Mm-hmm. There were every person on this team who was either in the uniform or in the front office can look at last year and go, that didn't go well. I messed that up. And if they're not, then they're not being honest with themselves. And I think that's what it's going to take as many people messed stuff up last year, making things better if this is going to work. And if not, then it's just going to look like they talked a lot about leadership and added a bunch of guys with experience and then said, well, why didn't it work? It's going to have to be collective, and he's got to be that unifier. that was supposed to be one of his biggest strengths, is his ability to break down silos and departments, connect everybody together. This is going to be a big test of his ability to do that this year.
Exiting last year, one of the things that the Cardinals would have said is that the problems they had, if they were to simplify them down or at least kind of trace the fault lines, as I tried to describe it, back to what went awry, they would look at the health of the rotation and the effectiveness of the rotation and asking too much from young guys too soon and it all coming apart. And then just the randomness, variability, all that stuff in the outfield, lack of production, lack of health, lack of consistency, and poor defense. Fast forward now as they leave spring training, and where are the questions? The health of the rotation, and what are they going to do in the outfield, and are they going to side with offense or defense, or do they have, because of injury, do they have some way to do both? It's pretty similar questions, right? So doesn't that invite the, well, what lessons did they learn from last year that are applying different approaches?
Yeah, and I think you'd throw in, too, they sat around a lot last year and said the big reason things got off the track and stayed off the track was because the season started poorly.
Yeah, here we are again.
And now there's almost like this proactive approach to kind of look at the schedule. Like, the season can start poorly, so let's remind everybody that if the season starts poorly, it's not where it winds up. Which is true, but you just said that this poor start to last year's season was the reason. I mean, it's like, come on now. You can't say that. Yeah, we looked back at last season and said the poor start was what really got us. And then at the same time, when you're facing down a bear of a start, say, well, remember, how you start the season doesn't. I mean, people see through that. And it goes into, is this deja vu all over again, right?
Right.
They think that a lot of this is betting on the fact that they think they're going to get Sonny Gray back relatively soon. Mm-hmm. And that this is going to be a blip, not a thing that messes up his season. If it's other than that, they're in trouble, because I think everybody, most reasonable people, agreed this team should have added two starters clearly better than Miles Michaelis. I'm actually higher on Miles Michaelis than a lot of the fans. I've tried to make the case that he's a decent three mm-hmm. in a rotation. And what I mean by that is when he's really good, he can be an all-star. And when he's really bad, he pitches 200 innings and his ERA might suck, but he's going to take the ball every 5 days and stay on the mound and try to give you a chance to win. That's pretty much what you need. If you have that in a three and two guys better than that, you're a pretty good rotation.
You are.
And now look what's happened. Sonny Gray's out for the opening day start, and who do they name? Miles Michaelis, and it's a no-brainer to do it. That means they added one starter better than Miles Michaelis, not two. And that's the risk they've taken. I think there's some overlap in Lance and Kyle that maybe if you take one of those guys and then take a guy in between mm-hmm. Sonny and those guys, then this thing looks a little more potent. But the fact that Sonny's the big addition, the lone big addition, and he's injured going into this, I think has people worried, rightfully so. I think the one thing they absolutely can control and must do is something that you're certainly hearing the manager push, and it's interesting because it's the exact opposite of what happened last year, is when you can, prioritize defense.
Mm-hmm.
Because last year we saw the opposite. When you can, prioritize offense. The offense wasn't always there, but the bad defense was, and you can't hide it. And that tune has changed from the manager's office, as he wants to play the best defense he can, especially when they're waiting to get back to full health. I think it's the smart call. Your offense should be fine. It's not going to be great without Lars, I don't think, but it can be fine. If you don't put the best defense you can most nights around this pitching staff, things could get ugly. And I think you got to think long term there. What's the best for the confidence, but also the effectiveness of this rotation? If you're gonna take a risk on a little bit more dynamic, a little bit less dynamic offense, but rock solid defense for a pitching staff that is going to have balls in play. Mm-hmm. That has to be the way they lean, I think. And I also think, too, it's the right risk in terms of the optics. Cardinals fans, they're okay if the offense isn't elite right out of the gate. They're tired of watching
bad baseball,
bad pitching. Mm-hmm. and they're tired of watching bad defense. And they would like to see some speed and some aggression and aggressiveness on the base paths, which a defense-first lean probably helps you do, too. I think this is about as much about how many games do they want to win in this first month of the first month of the season. As much, I think it's more about how do you want to look, like how do you want to be viewed. Mm-hmm. Do you want to be viewed as a team that's going to pitch tough and play good defense, which is what a lot of Cardinals fans will say, yeah, that's what they want. Or do you want to be viewed as a team that is scrambling for offense and identityless, which is what they had last season, and it wasn't good.
So what changes? Let's go through the hurdles that face them and say, all right, the hurdles are similar to last year. So what changes in approach would say, all right, no, they learned from that, and maybe this will have a different outcome, as opposed to here they are back in the quicksand. Let's start with the obvious one. Would a change and a lesson learned from last year be if an opening day, because of the size of the ballparks that they spend the first month playing, because of the priority on defense, they start Victor Scott in center field? They thought that Tommy Edman, if healthy, could go out and win a Gold Glove, and their alternative options are Dylan Carlson in center or the young man who has yet to play really in AAA, but won a minor league Gold Glove. So you could go from the guy you think was going to win a Gold Glove to the guy who won a minor league Gold Glove and put Dylan in left field and have left and center covered defensively. Would that be a notable change that would have its roots in last year's lessons?
Yes. And in some ways, Dylan Carlson, the way he's swung the bat with authority and he keeps calling it intent this spring, I think has made it more of an appealing option, because it would be easy to say, well, we'll just put Alec Burleson in left and tell Victor Scott to catch everything in between Jordan Walker and say an Alec Burleson. And Burleson's had a great camp, but Dylan's had a very impressive camp, and I love his response to the competition. That's what you want to see from Dylan. Now, can he sustain it? We'll see. But the outfield you just mentioned is probably your best defensive outfield realistically.
If Jordan Walker's in it. I mean, your best defense.
I mean, yeah, but you got to, like, to me, like.
I mean, your best defensive outfield is Jordan Walker at DH.
Yes.
Brendan Donovan in left, Dylan in right, and Victor Scott II in center. That's the best defensive outfield that they can put together right now with Lars Nootbaar and Tommy Edman injured.
Yes, and then you're playing Nolan Gorman at second, which is not ideal as playing Brendan Donovan there defensively if you go that route, and you got to have Gorman and Donovan in there. So you're maximizing your outfield, but perhaps not having as good of an infield as you potentially could have. Gorman's looked better at second base this spring.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah,
he's played really well at second.
Yes, he has. That's what you're balancing. I don't know that you want to commit to Gorman we know they don't want to commit to Gorman or Walker as a full-time DH yet. Mm-hmm. So to me, with Walker in the outfield, that's what you could do. And then you can tell Victor, and you already have, go get everything you can. Mm-hmm. And
he does. He caught a ball in West Palm, and then 15 minutes later seemed to catch a ball in Jupiter. I mean, he's
climbing the walls of the ballpark of the Palm Beaches. Yeah. He's had a really impressive spring, man. And
he can do a lot of things.
I will point to one. Everybody heard, and rightfully so, the Dylan Carlson Grand Slam in West Palm Beach. And it was a heck of a swing and a big moment that he seized, and you don't take that away from him. The guy who got on base before him to set it up was Victor Scott, with the competitor that he's trying to beat out looming over his shoulder in the on-deck circle with runners on base. Mm-hmm. Hey, man, go hit a three-run homer. Mm-hmm. That's not his game. What did he do? Took a walk, got on base, boom, Dylan Carlson Grand Slam. Two innings later, scale the wall, pluck a ball out of the air that was going over. I mean, that's who this kid is. He's not going to be pressured into playing a game that's not his.
Yeah.
And that's impressive to me. I think how he's performed this spring, great average, great on base, leads the team in stolen bases, playing great defense. But what he's not trying to do, to me, is just as impressive.
Yeah.
Because you're not seeing him go, okay, how can I go be somebody I'm not today to draw attention? He's just doing what he does. And I think his teammates, his major league teammates, are seeing that going, you know, this guy this guy fits. Mm-hmm. And here's what I would encourage the Cardinals to do is it doesn't have to – sometimes the Cardinals, I think, get trapped. And when I talk about breaking out of, like, norms, like, mm-hmm. patterns, ruts, they do this thing where, like, they only see the negative of something. I don't think Victor Scott – and I don't pretend to know him as well as everybody. In talking to him, I don't get that he's the kind of guy – who, if he breaks camp with this team, gets a shot at debuting in the majors, and is told, hey, look, we're not healthy. You can help us, but this isn't guaranteed you're here the whole year. Guys are going to come back, and we're going to reevaluate this as it goes. I don't get the sense that Victor Scott is like going to go into some like hole and never come out of it if they end up sending him down.
Right.
If Tommy Edman gets healthy, and if Lars Nussbaum gets healthy. Mm-hmm. To me, it would be a reward for how he's played, and you can also use him, and that's what I see is I see a roster where you could take Alec Burleson, you could take Dylan Carlson, you could take Victor Scott. That doesn't mean you're leaving off of Brandon Crawford. It doesn't mean you're leaving off. I mean, you got Crawford, Burleson, Carpenter on your bench as left-handed options. You're playing a pretty dang good defensive outfield with a rangy center fielder protecting your weakest asset out there. And then you can toggle. You can either move Brendan Donovan around. You can play – you can DH Gorman and try to continue to protect his back a little bit. I mean, that to me would be a sign that they are really putting their money where their mouth is about improving this defense.
And then on the starting side, okay, so what decision there would signal that they've made an adjustment or learned from last year? They have a spot open possibly for the first turn, maybe in the first week and a half because of Sonny Gray's – injury. They do not yet know and won't know when this podcast is up, probably until the team gets to Arizona, if Gray will be a part of that first road trip or even a candidate for the home opener. Lance Lynn is another candidate for that spot. And then, or if it's after that. Regardless, they open the season with such a rigorous number of games in multiple different time zones, two West Coast trips in the first few weeks. And then, you know, time change, constant games, very few off days, four in a row in L.A., three in a row. They have eight games before they have a day off, right, to start the season. So it would invite a six-man rotation. What choice could they make with it and with that spot that would signal a difference from last year?
I'm all in on Lance Lynn starting the home opener. I'm talking it into existence. I think it would be fun for him, fun for fans. Matt Carpenter is going to start opening day DH. We're calling it.
At the home opener, yeah.
And well, maybe in LA too.
Right, it could. If Victor Scott's not there, then it's opening for Matt Carpenter's open for the DH spot.
He's smoking doubles, making it look easy. Definitely like Lance for the home opener. It seems like they are not wanting to draw a line between Libertor and Thompson, which makes it seem like they're going to maybe try to...
So it's a lot like last year, where they were both roles depending on the whim and the need.
It's not what I would do.
Nothing's changed. Learned, so is what could they do that would change last year's outcome?
What they could do that could change last year's outcome would be to sign Jordan Montgomery.
Okay.
And that's what they should do, because when you see what Blake Snell gets, you know Jordan's going to get less, and you go to him and you say, let's run it back. You have no time to get used to a new team. The Rangers are crying poor about their TV situation. The Yankees wanted Snell more than you. Come back here where we had a career 3 ERA when you were here. You're familiar with everything. And if you want an opt-out after year one, great. Maybe you'll pitch well enough to take it. Mm-hmm. And go pay him handsomely for one season and show your fans that you're serious about getting back and going deep into the postseason again. And then if all your pitchers get healthy, you got too many good starting pitchers, great, because that's a great thing to have and that's a great place to deal from, and guys are going to continue to get hurt and it's not going to be the problem that people think it would be. Is that going to happen? No, I don't think so. I would like to see them, if they're not going to do that, which they're not, I'd like to see them go and say, look, Zach Thompson, you are the one guy who took the opportunities available last season and made the most out of them most consistently. Then you came to spring and you were gritty and you showed that you could compete and could work effectively in ways where you didn't have some of your best stuff, and you gave the impression of a guy who's earned this opportunity. and you deserve a chance to be that guy instead of being that guy and or Matthew Liberatore. And that's probably a hard conversation to have, but based off of what I've watched since I've been down here, what I saw last season, I don't think there's anybody who's done a better job in that spot of taking opportunities during a lost season and making the most out of them. So that's what I would like to see. I think he's earned it.
And sticking with him, maybe. Don't say like, hey.
Don't have him looking over his shoulder.
Right.
This is your start today. No, be very clear with like what the role. Like that. Maybe that is the empathy element that we'll be talking about, but also be very clear. Look, you're starting. You're in the rotation, and we need you to start here. That doesn't mean you're going to start the next time, but it also doesn't mean that you have to start well today to stay in there, because this role is going to be a little bit different, and we're being honest with you. You're in the rotation. You're not just holding a spot for Sonny Gray, but you're also not day-to-day wondering where your role is.
And Zach's a smart guy. He understands the risks to this rotation, right?
Yeah.
And no one's wanting to see guys go down, but if being the next man up in this rotation could lead to some starts,
yeah,
and even more reason than to have a guy who's confident that that's his. This isn't like an anti-Liberatore thing. How many times can the Cardinals give him the first benefit of the doubt and have it not be something he grabs and takes with performance before they try to wonder what if you try that approach with the other guy?
Yeah, that's a fair question. All right, is there anything about the difficult start, the difficult schedule off the hop, 22 of the first 25 against winning teams, 19 of the first 25 against playoff teams, back-to-back series against the last back-to-back NL pennant winners. Is there anything that they can do about that would signal a change from last year?
Sign Jordan Montgomery.
Okay.
Wait. They could get ready to start all of their starters out of the bullpen, because that's probably what Mike Schilt's going to do to try to beat them in San Diego.
Yeah.
When he's like bringing in Musgrove to close. Yeah. And they're treating it like
getting it backwards.
Like, hey, Schilty, it's a long season. You sure you want to treat this like game 7 of the World Series? He's like, this is personal.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they try in their own way, in the very Cardinals way of like pretending that their moves can dictate what the fans think. I think they tried to kind of dial back some of the pressure by the Ollie extension, but I don't know if that might have made it worse. Wow. The Cardinals are in this spot now where like everything they do is just reacted to in negatively in the 180 degree direction opposite. In terms of how they manage the lineups or the rosters, or what do you mean?
Yeah, that's actually where I thought you might go, and also where I think they might go is consistency. You know, Ollie has talked about wanting to have the same lineup.
Oh, yeah.
Ollie has talked about wanting to have some semblance of like day-to-day defensive stability. This is your position. This is where you'll play. They talked about that with Tommy Edman. They talked about that with Lars Nupar. Obviously, injuries have adjusted that, but that doesn't mean they can't still do that. And I wonder if maybe that's because you think about that start last year, and I was standing there in San Francisco, and Mo was talking through the moves that they were making, the roster moves, and I said, this is very uncharacteristic of y'all. And he's like, what do you mean by that? I'm like, this is chaos. Like, you know, usually they're very meticulous and, you know, and they're very succinct. And while you may not agree with their moves, they don't let them like catch up with them and feel like they're just like scrambling to make a call. They don't treat the roster like, you know, like a greased egg, you know. I mean, they just don't. Yeah. And all of a sudden they were, you know, Motter was DFA'd one day, re-signed the next, stayed in a hotel. You know, I mean, that was just like, how do you make that choice? It gave the sense. And I mean, I wrote it at the time. They're a team that is losing, that has no idea how to stop losing. And they became inconsistent, grasping for this next foothold. I mean, they were basically a rock climber sliding down the face of the Grand Canyon, trying to find the foothold that they thought could do it next. So is a change a commitment? Like, hey, we believe in this lineup. We believe in this defense. Let's go 30 days with it. Let's go. Mason Wynn, You are the shortstop for 30 days. We're not going to pull a Mark Ellis with you and put Brandon Crawford in there because we're hungry for offense and, gosh, we need a win. You're the guy. You're the guy. And that would be a change. That would be a change. It wouldn't look like they're scrambling for the next question, or they're scrambling for an answer that creates the next question.
Yeah, they were kind of like the guy who has a engine problem, and they starts taking the engine apart piece by piece, and like, okay, I fixed this, but now where did this part go? Still got a broken engine. And you got grease all over your hands.
They were the Lego set without a piece.
Yeah, and now the driveway is covered in parts. commitment, yeah, and it sounds great to say it right now. And in three games, if Mason Wynn doesn't have a hit, then everybody will want him, you know, will want him sent to Memphis. Resisting that, resisting changes for the sake of changes, I think is going to be the key. Because I think last year they did make changes for the sake of changes. I think Jordan obsessing over Jordan Walker's launch angle when he had a historic start in a hit streak for a rookie was change for the sake of change. I think pretending all of a sudden that your starting catcher was going to be not a catcher after you told everybody all offseason that it was going to look different and there needed to be time and it wasn't Yachty, and then falling into that trap of thinking exactly how you told people not to think was change for the sake of change. Avoiding those things is going to be huge. But already you're seeing how things can upset that line of thinking. Like Brendan Donovan was going to be more steady defender this year. Well, now he's do everything guy again. And that's fine because I really do believe that he's mostly comfortable doing that. But I think finding that steadiness where you can commit to it and then not wavering is going to be big. To me, it's not a lineup, but it might be your top six and nine. And then leaving some fluctuations in the middle based off of your matchups and your decisions. And
I think Jordan's batting seventh, so maybe the top seven, right? It sure seems like Jordan's at seven.
I'd probably hit him sixth.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah.
After Contreras. Okay. But yeah, that you've got six lineup spots that are more, and then Wynn in at ninth, and like just leave him alone. Don't just let him play defense. And if the defense starts to show signs of the offensive frustration, then you got something you got to look at.
Yeah.
But as long as he's playing the defense that you know he can play, you just leave him alone. Like knowing where to tweak and where to just stand with, I think is going to be huge. And that's in some ways the defense. Like, is it not, if you're going to go Victor in center, it can't be Victor in center one day, bench for 3 days, back in, like, it needs to be a commitment. And if it's going to be Dylan in center, the same thing. But make up your mind and stick with it, and then find the spots where you do want to have some churn and inform those guys accordingly so that it doesn't feel like it's coming out of nowhere.
Right. When you have, I think actions reveal their feelings, right? And the actions last year started to reveal that they didn't believe in the team they had. They had to change it. If they believe in this team and they've spent a lot of time saying that they believe in this team, then show it by sticking with it. And all right, see what happens. But at least you stuck with it. You know, because if you start changing things all quickly, you know, you were talking earlier about the message sent to young guys, right? The message sent to fans, if they start making these changes and start responding to the difficult opening of the season is, well, we didn't believe in this team. Sorry. Yeah, we told you all winter we really believed in this team. We thought we had this figured out. But, you know, April 20th, we're not believing in this team anymore. That would send a real, real strong and U-turn message from what they want.
And I think too, there are enough guys in this clubhouse now who know what it looks like when there's levers being pulled left and right, and they're gonna see it for what it is. Yeah, you're right. That's something to be. That's something to think on too.
Yeah, that's the other side of the experience Lance thing. Lynn is they see it.
Lance Lynn watched the White Sox come apart at the seams. Mm-hmm. He's going to know if he's seeing signs of that happening here.
Great point.
And he should be someone who says this. Hey, this doesn't look right.
Right.
And that's Carpenter can do that. And you know that's part of the job. That one of the things that I think was lacking last year was kind of voices from the clubhouse saying, I mean, so Ollie deserves full credit blame wise for the Contreras position. He didn't stop it. And it was coach led. It was manager led. Contreras at one
pitchers led.
Pitchers were trashing him. Contreras at one point, I think was kind of somewhat open to it maybe because he was so messed up and then he wasn't. Someone in that clubhouse could have also stepped up and said, this is what bad teams do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, guys, this is dumb. Mm-hmm. And maybe there would have been a moment of clarity. They have more guys who should feel comfortable saying that now and have no problem speaking out now. Mm-hmm. A couple come to mind specifically, and that's good.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully a little more mentally experienced, resilient. I've said it before. I wrote it. I've said it again. They are going to be a tougher team than they were last year. We'll see if that's a better team. But usually tougher teams are better teams. But you got to be talented too, because if not, you'd get a bunch of high school heroes out there. And it's not of the movies. Mentally tough doesn't mean everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this team will be tougher. And maybe – I think that's what the Cardinals are in a tough spot, because they don't want to just come out and say they're going to get drilled in April. I think what they're really thinking, though, is it's going to be a tough month, but we have a tougher team, and we're more confident in their ability to stick through that and be better after it. Last year, I don't think they could feel that way.
I wanted to lead the conversation in the direction of the schedule because of where the Cardinals open, and not just because it's such a difficult schedule to start the year, but also because what is going to greet them at Dodger Stadium. The four-game series at Dodger Stadium, what's set up to be the home opener and the home debut in Dodger blue of Shohei Ohtani and Yoshinobu Yamamoto, is now taken on a wildly different tone. Maybe not for the packed house fans who are going to be thrilled that Ohtani is there, but certainly for the dozens and dozens and dozens of media that are there to cover this moment. What is that going to be like? What do you think? I mean, is chaos come to town for the Dodgers?
Well, I think that they're still the most talented team in baseball, and that's probably as long as Ohtani plays. As of now, there's no indication that he won't be. Then that probably plays out. But if you're the Cardinals, you feel great about the timing of this betting investigation and scandal and everything, because it's just a little bit. It's a little bit of a blessing and what looked like a curse of a schedule.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really. And they're not saying, "Oh, we're going to go win because Ohtani had to fire." They fired Ohtani's interpreter for betting on betting.
For they say betting, yeah. So okay, quick recap.
Wait, hold up.
All right.
But it's like the one thing that the Cardinals have had on the face of this schedule where you go, "Oh, maybe the distraction level helps them out a little bit," because things are going to be so chaotic for the Dodgers in the first place. And then this. Also, Yamamoto just got absolutely shelled in his debut after a rocky spring. I think he's going to be fine, but early.
One inning.
Early on, yeah.
Five runs.
Maybe getting a shot at the Dodgers. If you have to go up against the Dodgers, maybe getting a shot at the Dodgers right now is when you'd want to get it, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So recap. Okay. So the Dodgers go to Korea. They open the regular season with two games against the San Diego Padres, Mike Schilt's club. And in between the first and second game, the Dodgers fire Shohei Ohtani's longtime interpreter and close friend. This comes minutes after the two of them are talking and laughing in the dugout, and you know all the cameras caught him. You know, according to reports from the Los Angeles Times and ESPN, there's an investigation, federal investigation going on with illegal bookkeeping. That has payments tied to Shohei Ohtani. ESPN reported that two of the payments, his money, that two of the payments are have his name on it, two of the wire transfers. Shohei Ohtani's attorneys, after some confusion of interviews and stories.
Good word for it.
Yeah, you think?
Confusion.
Yeah. After different stories are told.
Hey, by the way, I know I said I would take out the trash this week at the condo. There was some confusion.
Okay.
And thank you for doing it.
You're welcome. The story shifts in a way after the interpreter speaks to ESPN and says that Shohei knew about the payments. Shohei's attorneys release a statement to the LA Times and ESPN that says, no, this is an indication, or this is a case of quote unquote massive theft, and says that they're going to report it to the authorities. Not much details are offered beyond that. And Shohei Ohtani did not speak to reporters after the second game. This is what greets the Dodgers when they return to Arizona for a few more exhibition games, and what will greet the Cardinals at Dodger Stadium is a full-blown, in-your-face reckoning for Major League Baseball with a federal investigation involving gambling, and now tied to the interpreter and friend of the biggest star in the game, who just signed the biggest contract in North American pro sports history. Your thoughts, Ben Fredrickson?
Well, Yamamoto's got to feel good about it, because no one's talking about his 14,000 ERA. He can't make this stuff up.
It's crazy.
I said this, you and I were doing something for the radio show that I do on the Big 550, and I'll repeat it, but I'm gobsmacked, to use a favorite word of yours, that MLB hasn't announced an their own investigation immediately, just for the sake of nothing else, of pretending like you care. I mean, my God, Derek, give me a prominent player,
Mike Trout.
Sure. If this was Mike Trout with the Angels, wouldn't Major League Baseball have announced its own investigation by now?
Yeah.
I think it would. And the fact that the initial comments...
Actually, maybe Mike Trout's not the example. Maybe you pick a player who is really good, who like has maybe faced some like questionable before, right?
Mike has definitely been the face of baseball,
right?
And now Ohtani is. So I would say, like, if this was Ronald Acuna Jr.,
yeah,
they would be,
or Aaron Judge,
sure. If it was, if it was Freddie Freeman, for God's sake, well, maybe not on the Dodgers, but if it was anybody other than Shohei Ohtani right now, I would think that Rob Manfred would have had an investigation announced so fast that there would have been letters missing from the press release announcement because they couldn't type it fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
And for the people speaking on behalf of Major League Baseball, who are speaking anonymously, please, for the love of God, people writing about this story, stop referencing and quoting the former interpreter, who no one can trust his credibility. Is he a liar? Is he not a liar? Stop quoting him. Stop referencing him saying Ohtani doesn't bet on baseball. His opinion cannot be trusted on anything.
Yeah.
And please stop quoting and referencing people who won't put their name on stuff. A spokesman for Ohtani, who? But they're not, like, if they're not going to put their name on it, like, they're not. It's just contributing to the confusion. But the fact that someone on Major League Baseball rushed out to say, as of now, there's no investigation into Ohtani, that's absurd. This has to be investigated.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what's going to come out of this. The feds are still looking into these things. It's unfortunate for Ohtani, because there's really only two things to believe. We don't know which one's true. One is this guy has no clue about anything, and the people around him are just running everything he does other than hit and pitch, which is kind of an unfortunate portrayal of this guy.
Yeah, really, yeah.
And we don't know we don't know what's accurate.
Kind of rude.
And then the other one is that maybe he was involved in this. And to me, MLB has to look into it. I can't believe they haven't announced an investigation at the time we're recording this. And this can't, you can try to sweep something like this under the rug, but you're going to have a one lumpy rug, and it's going to be, people going to be tripping all over it. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he's such a private figure, people don't know this. And they don't, not that they need to. This guy is not like some darling with media. Like, he doesn't talk. Like, my God, we've listened to reporters who've had to cover him melt down about not being able to get access. And that was before this. He may never talk again. And it's such a huge problem for baseball that their gut reaction seems to be, initial reaction seems to be to, like, distance him from it, I think is the wrong call, because you're better off trying to let an investigation prove that he didn't know what he didn't know. Because as of right now, I think there are a lot of assumptions, and they're just assumptions, but that he maybe knew more than is being alleged. And that's not, if that's untrue, that's unfair to him. So this is going to be the biggest story in sports, and it's not going to be a short story.
No, and it's not going to be a comfortable one for writers, for readers, for players, or for Major League Baseball, because it does bring up a reckoning with its relationship now with betting and gambling.
Yeah, it does. But I also, like, it does.
I mean, for all of
these
us.
These guys know what they can and can't do. Like, these guys know. Like, they know the difference between the team getting in line in bed with DraftKings or something, and players who play the game whose fingerprints are on the baseballs. They know what they can and can't do. Mm-hmm. And if they don't know, then they're not listening. They're not paying attention.
Right.
I mean, the reality is, like, is it hypocritical? 100%. I love the Grant Brisby tweet about my commentary on the Ohtani scandal brought to you by this betting site. And it was making fun of just the silliness of this. But I these guys, these players and these officials, these people within the game, they know what they're doing, and they know what they're doing is wrong.
Right.
And that can't be excused or glossed over, even in this era of all these really blurry lines.
There's an argument to be had that the legal, right? Okay, so, like, there are areas where this is legal. So the legal sports book and the legal advertisement, the legal gambling, that they want to get clarity just as much as Major League Baseball, that they don't like the fact that this is leaking together or blending together, and that it's actually in their best interest to say, like, look, there is a big difference between the legal gambling that is advertising at this newspaper, the legal gambling that has that billboard ad at every ballpark, the legal setup, and then this illegal stuff, and that it's in their best interest to draw a very thick line between that too, and that can be part of this. Like, that there actually could be clarity that comes through. You got to fight the perception first and foremost, but baseball has to take a part in that, right? Like, if they're gonna have, you know, this relationship with MGM Grand, they're gonna have that as a showcase place for them, then make it clear that you are involved in this because they have clear lines of what is permissible and what can be done. Like, that has to be, you know, it can't be like, they got to color within the lines, right? Okay, this is all good within the lines. It can't be like, well, we'll smudge the lines a little bit because we're coloring it green and we like the money.
I think that people have to understand the difference between what the conversation is, legal and illegal gambling. Mm-hmm. And that there's a whole nother conversation about what is allowed and not allowed in baseball.
Right. These are two. Yes.
And
yeah,
this thing is going to blend point. Both of those, because California doesn't allow sports gambling.
Yeah.
So this big gambling that was taking place was illegal gambling. That, to me, as a consumer, as someone who writes about baseball and likes baseball, in some ways, the legality of this, to me, sports gambling in California will probably be legal in like 2 years.
Right.
So to me, just in terms of, like, okay, what's a federal? Is it a federal? What's worse, a federal crime or breaking baseball's rules? Well, if you're a citizen, it's a pretty easy federal crime. In terms of from the baseball view, the baseball rules are going to matter more in terms of, like, a player's legacy, mm-hmm. in terms of a lot of ways a player's probably punishment. That to me is important to draw out, because baseball, I think, has done a smart thing. It has told players, we don't care if you legally bet on anything but baseball. They can have their NCAA tournament picks on their ESPN app through ESPN Bet, they can throw millions of dollars on the Super Bowl. And that to me is like, that's common sense. Like, who cares if Lance Lynn is putting money on, you know, his Ole Miss team to do whatever, his basketball team. That's not affecting baseball. Mm-hmm. Very clearly in the rules, it's don't bet on baseball. Don't be involved with any sort of betting, legal or illegal, mm-hmm. that can be tied to baseball. But here's the thing that kills me about this Ohtani stuff, and to me, it's what the league absolutely has to investigate. You're not supposed to help inform mm-hmm. anyone who's betting legally or illegally on baseball. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to be calling your brother who's over at the casino saying, hey, just got news. Our starter's out today, so hammer us. We're losing. That's mm-hmm. if they catch you doing that, that's should be a massive punishment. That is what has to be protected, is the innocence and the unpredictability of the actual contest. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's impossible to do that. But here's the thing. It's been a challenge to do that always before sports betting was legalized. There were sports betting scandals. There were point-shaving scandals before sports betting was legalized. But I think in some ways the legality of it, making it legal, has made it easier to track, because mm-hmm. now it can be federally regulated easier. But that's a whole other can of worms. To me, like, that's what has to be investigated here, is what was Ohtani sharing information? Was he nobody knows.
Right.
And anyone pretending they do know is full of it. And that has to be something that is treated very seriously by the league. The federal government, the Fed investigators probably don't care that much about that. That's not their worry. Mm-hmm. That's why MLB's got to care. And that's the whole thing. I mean, the things that are scariest about this to me are when you see people inside taking the information, and then there's the threat to influence outcomes.
Yeah.
The Alabama baseball coach working with someone to place massive bets against his own team when he finds out his starting pitcher can't pitch that day.
Right.
You're going to tell me that he didn't manage that game differently on top of the injury news?
Right.
I mean, of course he did.
Right.
Like, those are the things that when you start going to the ballpark not trusting the outcome of the game, everything's at risk.
Yeah,
absolutely. Our special section is in Papers Sunday, March 24th edition. It previews the 2024 St. Louis Cardinals and Major League Baseball season. It has this column by you about leadership. It has a column by Benjamin Hockman about the Power Five that he thinks will be in the lineup. It has the Post-Dispatch 12, which is the 12 best prospects in the organization, ranking of them. Each of them has not yet been in the majors. Number one is, of course, but it's Victor Scott II, of course.
He's sped to the top.
Yep.
But there's someone else pretty high on that list, too, that's had a pretty good spring.
There is. There is someone else there. Daniel Guerrero did those. Our colleague Lynn Worthy did all the rundown and scouting reports of the other position. That takes a lot of work to do that and to go through it, and it's worth reading it because he writes not just a review of what it looks like, but what happens if it goes awry.
It'll go awry.
Right.
There's a story about Sonny Gray in there and whether or not he's ready for the spotlight of leading rotation back into contention. Really the first time he's been a number one, probably the first time that a team said, okay, be our ace. And it's definitely the first time in more than a generation that the Cardinals have brought that person in from the outside via free agency or trade. And then there's the cover story, which talks about the old school approach with an older rotation and whether or not the Cardinals, who fell far behind in the modern game, are saying, well, we're going to catch up by going back to the past. In that special section, there's also our picks. And I picked the Padres to win the NL West because the Dodgers are, wow.
Now, wait a second. You picked the Padres before the betting scandal broke out.
I did.
What did you know?
Well, what I knew is that they spent $1 billion on free agents this spring, and they're starting Mookie Betts at shortstop, and you can't name their third starter.
I think you might have had some inside info.
In a four-game series.
You might have had some inside info.
Can you name their third starter?
Yeah, Kershaw will be back.
No.
He'll be back eventually.
Eventually.
He's about 100 now?
No, he's really good. But, like, they spent $1 billion, and they're like, meh, we'll figure it out. You want to know who losing would humble? You want to talk about the Cardinals saying, well, it'll work out because it has in the past. The Dodgers, we can get as creative as anyone because we'll work it out. That, man, that's going to be an expensive fall if they can't figure it out. And now they have this on top of it, too.
You and I both picked the same team to win the World Series.
Who'd you pick?
The Braves.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, big year for the Braves. You get to be a powerhouse team with basically no one talking about you because everyone's obsessed with the Dodgers.
No kidding.
And you just go put the best lineup in baseball out there,
yeah,
and rake.
Yeah, I ranked the five best rotations in the league. You know, Atlanta's one of them. You rank the best lineups in the league. Atlanta's one of them. You know what the Dodgers aren't? They're not. Well, I mean, it's crazy.
The Braves had a good manager. Oh, wait.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they have that, too. That is St. Louis Post-Dispatch sports columnist Ben Fredrickson. Thank you very much for joining me on the best podcast in baseball. The best podcast in baseball and all of the constant Cardinals coverage is available at stltoday.com, including all of the season preview stuff. You can find it there. The best podcast in baseball, again, brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis, is available also on iTunes, where you can react and review and rate the podcast and let us know what we could do better. We're headed soon on the road. This is the last podcast from Jupiter, Florida. We'll be off in California for one, maybe Arizona for one. But the best podcast in baseball, after starting its 12th season here in the under the sun of Jupiter, is leaving under a rainstorm that washed out Sonny Gray's minor league start. So we better get off to find out the latest on that and what it means for his schedule and his return. And we will have that information up for you ASAP at stltoday.com. You probably already read it. It's probably already there. It's probably already. It's, you've read it. Ben's tweeted it. We're all set, right?
You're asking me if I've read it?
Yeah.
No, we produce so much stuff down here. I only read like 3/4 of it. I'm going to read the rest of it on the plane home.
Almost 200 different articles in like 40 days. It's crazy.
Yeah, but if you're a good hitter, if you hit 3 out of 10, I'm trying to read 3 out of 10.
You're really good. Yeah. Don't have that as a fielding percentage.
It takes me a while to read things. Listeners of the podcast will understand that.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, promo code STAPLE20.